And okay. All right. Very good. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu. Saha Vidyan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarvabhutakuhashayam Yat Sarva Vishayatitam Tasmai Sarva Vide Namaha. Very good. Welcome to all of you. Welcome also to our many students attending these classes online. We continue with this excellent section of chapter 18. Let me see this one. I want to get the slide up. Yes. So Shankara continues to unfold what we call pratibimbavada. It is a metaphor that describes experience as a reflection of consciousness in your mind. And we've described that in such great detail in prior classes. I'm going to assume that you've attended those prior classes. Otherwise, go back and watch them. So we want to move ahead a little bit today, so I won't be explaining pratibimbavada. The value of pratibimbavada is how effectively it describes what we can legitimately call the central problem in Advaita Vedanta, the problem of superimposition. To superimpose the qualities, the attributes of your body and mind on your true nature, consciousness. Notice I said adhyasa is the primary problem. I didn't say ignorance is a primary problem. Isn't that interesting? That was quite intentional. Because if you only have ignorance and you have no superimposition, do you have any problem? In fact, deep sleep is a good example of that condition. You have only ignorance, no superimposition at all, no problem. So, really speaking, the central problem addressed by Vedanta is superimposition. Of course, we understand that superimposition comes as a result of ignorance. You see the snake because of ignorance of the rope, obviously. So, the value, one of the primary reasons we use this pratibimbavada so extensively, as I just said, is its ability to describe the process of superimposition. When you look at yourself in a mirror, the mirror, of course, represents the mind. Face represents Atma. The reflection of your face and the mind represents your experience, in particular, your experience of yourself as an individual being. There I am, as you look in the mirror. So, if the mirror is dirty, and you look kind of gray and faded and all of this, and you look at yourself, you say, well, I really look faded. So the quality of the mirror gets superimposed on this face which is not faded. That represents when your mind is dull or sad, just as the dullness and sadness are attributes of the mind, like the faded nature was an attribute of the mirror. So just as you superimpose the fadedness, if that's a word, of the mirror on the on your face, in the same way, we superimpose the condition of the mind on consciousness. And this is a source of unending trouble, because our minds are a source of unending trouble. You know, our minds are up and down and all over the place. And it's like you're being yanked about by the conditions of your mind. In Advaita Vedanta, you're led to discover that the attributes of the mind belong to the mind and not to you, the pure consciousness, which reveals those attributes of the mind. So if you are an enlightened mirror user, how's that? Well, just make up this stuff on the fly. If you are an enlightened mirror user, you'll know that the fadedness belongs, the fading, the dullness, whatever it is, belongs to the mirror. Your face is okay. You know that. Look at this. In spite of your experience, when you know that that your face isn't really faded, does it change what you see? Doesn't change what you see at all. So when an enlightened person has a headache, does that change the experience of the headache? Not the experience of the headache itself. Usually when you have a headache, it's accompanied by other stuff, like, oh, my head is splitting. That's not headache. Headache is an experience of pain. Oh, my head is splitting. In American English, we call that whining. And whining is one part of suffering. So for the enlightened person experiences a headache without suffering. And we've discussed in many other situations the huge difference between experience, between sensation and suffering, between the sensation of pain and the experience of suffering. We can say that suffering is a negative response to pain. You can have pain without that negative response. To introduce this next verse, yeah. I'll give one more example. Suppose you have a mirror, and you're looking at your face, and you tilt the mirror a little bit. If you tilt it like this, looks like your head is going up and down. If you tilt it like this, it looks like your head is going from side to side. Is your head moving at all? Looks like it. The motion of the mirror gets superimposed on your face. The motion of the mind, the activities of the mind, get superimposed on consciousness. And the most fundamental example of that is the notion of agency. When you are engaged in action, right now you're listening. You're engaged in the action of listening. And by the way, listening is active, right? Passive listening means what? Okay. That's a silly example. Which means just to gaze with nothing at all in your head. Listening is an act. You choose to do it. So it's an action. And you say, I am listening. Normal. Conventional wisdom. And as we've noted many times, conventional wisdom is so often wrong. So in this case, when you say, I am listening, that I most certainly doesn't refer to consciousness. consciousness which is unchanging, consciousness which doesn't do anything at all. When you say, I am listening, you're superimposing that particular activity of the mind is superimposed on consciousness. Now, in that case, there's no, it doesn't cause suffering. Well, that depends. Depends on what you're listening to. if you listen to some rap music, you might suffer. I would. So, in this situation, there's no suffering. The point is that this superimposition creates suffering. The superimposition of the activity of the mind, the superimposition of the agency of the mind. When you say, I did it, that's an expression of being an agent of action. In Sanskrit, karta. So to superimpose kartritva, agency. The agency of the mind gets superimposed on consciousness, and that is so fundamental to the problem of suffering. You identify with your body and mind as an agent of action. You do something, you don't get the results you want. You feel disappointed. You exert tremendous effort to get what you want. You get tired. This is really the problem. So with that introduction, let's pick up the thread. Yatra yasyava bhasastu, yatra yasyava bhasastu, tayor heva vivekataha, tayor heva vivekat, janati tikriyam sarvo, janati tikriyam sarvo, loko vakti swabhavataha, loko vakti svabhavataha. Yatra, with regard to atma, yasya avabhasaha, and with regard to the reflection of avabhasam, here means reflection, the reflection of consciousness in your mind too, but the problem is that consciousness and the consciousness reflected in your mind, tayoho, between the two of them, eva, indeed, there is aviveka, absence of discernment. We don't discern the difference between consciousness, pure consciousness, the consciousness which is your essential nature, and the manifestation of consciousness in the form of experience. Now, you might say, those are different? Yeah. This is the subtlety of Advaita Vedanta. And that's why Shankara goes on and on and on about this particular topic. This discernment is not an ordinary thing. Most people, if you ask, what is the difference between being conscious and having an experience? For most people, you say, how can you make it? And you say, no, in Vedanta, we make a huge difference. You say, you're splitting hairs, is what a common response would be. You're splitting hairs when you're trying to create a difference or prove that there's a difference between pure consciousness and its manifestation in your mind as experience. But you can call it splitting hairs, but this is an instance where splitting hairs has a huge, huge consequence. Let me give you an example in science. There have been cases in science where a predicted result and a measured result are different by 0.001%. And it turns out that the prediction, based on calculations, was wrong. This is, for example, this is Einstein's prediction that light is bent by gravity, that the difference is so minuscule. But before Einstein, no one ever considered it. It's so tiny. Who cares? Well, Einstein cared, and it revolutionized science. So just, you know, if you say that it's a hair-splitting difference between consciousness and experience manifest in your mind, it might be hair-splitting for some, but it's something that has huge consequences, because through that deep inquiry, we solve this problem of suffering. So we start by saying, the conclusion is that you are the consciousness. There's only one. You are the consciousness that reveals the changing conditions of your mind. The changing conditions of your mind are a reflection of that consciousness in your mind. So when you look at the mirror, I mean, in the case of the mirror, it seems so obvious. Somebody says it's hair splitting. Tell me, is it hair splitting to differentiate between this face and that face? Is that hair splitting? It's huge. That's how we understand it in Vedanta. This is not hair splitting. They are absolutely different. So right now, you have an experience. Are you an experience? Or are you having an experience? Then who is it that has the experience? This makes it seem very simple. Look at that. Who is it that's having this experience? Who is it that knows what is happening right now? Who is it that knows the changing conditions of your mind and unchanging consciousness that is your true fundamental nature? So, because avivekataha, because most people don't make this discernment, imagine. Can you imagine someone looking in the mirror and failing to make a discernment? This is a kind of like almost a joke Shankara is playing on us here. So anyway, moving on here. It says, avivekataha, due to the absence of discernment between, not the face and the mirror, because that's the metaphor, here, the lack of discernment, I shouldn't say face and mirror, I should say face and reflected face. Because of the lack of discernment here between your true nature as consciousness and what you're experiencing right now, your failure to discern that these are different, what is the consequence of that lack of discernment? Shankara says, sarvo loko, sarvaha loka, lokaha. All people, subhavata, naturally, vakti, all people naturally say, janati, iti, kriyam. All people naturally say, I know. Not just I know, I'm listening right now. I'm speaking right now, I'm thinking, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, etc., etc. All of that agency exists, but it belongs to the mind. And we wrongly superimpose the agency and activities of the mind get superimposed on the unchanging consciousness, which is your true nature. And Shankara says it very nicely here, sarvaha lokaha, all people, svabhavataha vakti. They naturally say this. This is the normal way of being in the world. Well, if you say it's normal, then what's wrong with it? Suffering is normal. If you're okay with suffering, you're welcome to get up and leave the class, because the purpose of all of this is to solve the normal problem of suffering. Okay, let's continue. Buddhe kartritva madhyasya
janati tignyahuchyate, janati tignyahuchyate, tatha chaitanya madhyasya nyatvam buddheri hochyate, nyatvam buddheri hochyate. Buddhehi kartritvam, kartritvam agency, the agency and activities, buddhehi of your mind, intellect, but mind in general, the agency and activities of your mind, adhyasya, get superimposed, atmani, we can add that word, obviously, on atma. You superimpose the activities of your mind on atma, just like when you move the mirror. Who would do that? You move the mirror, my head is moving. Come on. That's absurd. When you get it that you are unchanging consciousness at a fundamental level, it's just as silly to conclude that you are changing as would be for someone to conclude that their head is moving. For an enlightened person, it's that silly. I am unchanging consciousness is the clear understanding of that enlightened person. So when this agency of the mind gets superimposed on atma, and how? Janati iti, in the form of the conclusion, I know, I do, I think, etc., etc., through all of that. In that case, gnyaha, gnyaha, you have to add the vasarga, uchyate, the consciousness is said to know. When the activity, let me paraphrase this a little bit more clearly. When the activity of knowing, which is a mental activity, right? When the mental activity of knowing is superimposed on consciousness, then what do we say? Consciousness is a knower, gnyaha. Gnya means knower. When the mental activity of knowing is superimposed on consciousness, then consciousness is said to be a knower. And that's the conventional thing. I know. Well, the true meaning of I is unchanging consciousness, and unchanging consciousness can't be transformed into knower, thinker, doer, goer, etc., etc., unchanging. Now, Shankara points out something interesting, something that he actually talks about quite extensively in his introduction to the Brahma Sutra Bhasha. He talks a lot about adhyasa there, and he talks about adhyasa in the terms of anyonya adhyasa. He uses that exact expression. Anyonya means mutual. Mutual means, and this is where the mirror metaphor is perhaps not so helpful, setting the mirror metaphor aside, you do indeed superimpose the activities of the mind. Let me use Shankara's language in English.
you superimpose the properties of the mind. Philosophers love that word. You superimpose the properties of the mind on Atma, which doesn't have those properties. In fact, doesn't have any such properties. Well, unless you'd call being conscious as a property, you could call that. A philosopher would make that judgment. So properties of the mind are wrongly attributed to consciousness. And here, the reverse is also true. Properties of consciousness are wrongly attributed to the mind. Anyonya, mutual superimposition. And if you're thinking, well, what does that mean, that a property of consciousness is attributed to the mind? That's what Shankara explains in the second half here. He says, tata, in the same way, chaitanyam adhyasya, having superimposed the consciousness, which is a property of Atma, having superimposed it on the mind, then what? Buddhehe gnyatvam iti uchyate. Then, one says that buddhehe, that the mind has gnyatvam, here meaning consciousness. So the consciousness that belongs to Atma gets superimposed on the mind, and you say your mind is conscious. Would anyone say, my mind is unconscious? That doesn't, no one could say that. So we say the mind is conscious. Is it? Does, actually we can still pull this off with the mirror. Does the face, we talked about this long ago, does the face you see in the mirror belong to the mirror? Not at all. Does the consciousness that's manifest in your mind right now belong to your mind? Is it created by your mind? Is it created by your brain? This is a huge topic in neuroscience today. They're trying to prove that consciousness is created by your brain. By the way, they're failing. So they're not just trying again and again. They're failing. They have yet to prove. And 100 years from now, they will have given up. Because they'll understand this stuff. They haven't figured this out yet. Eventually, they will have to throw up their hands and say, consciousness is a fundamental... In fact, let's see that in the next verse. Are we done here with this verse? Yeah. So this is Anyonya Adhyasa, which introduces this new point. And that is, just as you superimpose attributes of the mind are superimposed on consciousness, similarly, attributes of Atma are superimposed on the mind. The consciousness that belongs to Atma is superimposed on mind. Mind becomes sentient. Remember that in ancient India, the mind was considered a thing, a subtle thing. That doesn't work in modern science, but in ancient times, the mind was considered subtle stuff, made of sukshma bhutas, and stuff by definition is insentient. That's the ancient worldview. Now, in the next two verses, yeah, I think we'll see these next two verses, we'll see that Shankara looks like he's anticipating the research of modern neuroscience. At least it looks to me like... By the way,
Please, you know, somebody said, oh, naturally Shankara was enlightened, he was omniscient, he knew everything. Give me a break. Shankara was a human being like you or me. He had no special power to know what neuroscientists were going to think hundreds and hundreds of years in the future. That's silliness, because it makes Shankara into a fictional character. Don't turn Shankara into a fictional character. That's not helpful. Okay, let us continue. Swarupam chatmano jnanam, swarupam chatmano jnanam, nityam jyotih shrutir yatah, nityam jyotih shrutir yatah, na buddhya kriyate tasman, na buddhya kriyate yasman, natmananyena vasada, natmananyena vasada. So examining now the superimposition of consciousness on the mind. When you say the mind knows, the mind thinks. Can the mind think in the absence of consciousness? Can the mind know anything in the absence of consciousness? Can that face appear in the absence of a head? Okay, this is the point that Shankara is making here. And he talks about atmanaha jnanam cha, atmanaha jnanam cha. And further, atmanaha jnanam, the jnana of atma is swarupam. And here Shankara is making a technical distinction that we have to come up to speed on. This word jnanam, if you look it up in a dictionary, there's a bunch of meanings. One of which is knowledge. Another of which is consciousness. The word jnanam can be used for consciousness. And Shankara now wants to discern the difference between these two uses of the word jnanam. So one meaning of jnanam is knowledge of an object. In Sanskrit, the object is vishaya, so knowledge of an object is called vishaya jnanam. Vishaya jnanam, knowledge of an object, objective knowledge. But Shankara, which means when you have knowledge that I'm sitting here, that is called vishaya jnanam, that is knowledge of an object. And Shankara wants to differentiate that from pure knowledge, knowledge as such, knowledge without an object, which is consciousness. And he calls that one, not he, but the tradition calls that consciousness is the essential nature of Atma. The word essential nature is swarupam, the first word here. So then Shankara differentiates swarupa jnanam, fundamental knowledge, which means let me retranslate that. Swarupa jnanam, the knowledge which is the essential nature of Atma, i.e. consciousness. So swarupa jnanam means consciousness, as opposed to vishaya jnanam, which is knowledge of an object, which is a mental event. So with that distinction in mind, we can understand what Shankara is talking about. So here, where he's talking about jnanam, he's not talking about knowledge of objects. He makes it very clear. So swarupa jnanam, the knowledge which is the fundamental nature of Atma, which is consciousness. That consciousness, Atmanaha, that belongs to Atma, he says, Shrutehe, according to our scriptures, that consciousness is Jyotihi, that which jyoti means light. Light is metaphorically used to describe that which reveals. So that sarupa jnanam, the consciousness which is your essential nature, reveals the activities of your mind, and then through your senses reveals everything outside. Now, the point of this verse, though, is focused on the word nityam. Do you need, he says, according to the scriptures, shutehe. According to the scriptures, do you need scriptures to tell you that you are conscious? Before studying Vedanta, you thought you were unconscious. Now, thank goodness. I'm being silly, making the point that we don't need scripture to know that you are conscious. We do need scripture to know that the consciousness present in your experience right now existed before the birth of your body and will continue to exist after the death of your body. Could you figure that out on your own? How? No way. So this is revealed by scripture that your consciousness is nityam, eternal, which goes along with unchanging. Now, if you ask, it's revealed by scripture, but remember, all of Vedanta is shruti, yukti, anubhava. So there's a lot of logic, yukti, and anubhava experience, which supports that scriptural revelation, which means this is not a matter of belief. When the scripture reveals that your consciousness existed before your conception and after your death, that's not a matter of belief. And in fact, I would just to challenge you, I say, if you believe it to be true, that belief is an obstacle to knowing that it's true. Too many people rest on belief. And to rest, oh, I believe it. That's like a shortcut, right? And it's not a very reliable shortcut because beliefs can be shaken, knowledge can never be shaken. So to rest on belief is to come short of the mark. Here, when scripture says, nityam jyotihi, the light of consciousness, is eternal, this is a truth, a fact to be discovered. It is not a matter of belief. How do you discover it? Shruti, yukti, anubhava, which is all of Vedanta. So, going on now, he says that scripture reveals the consciousness to be nityam, and therefore, tasmat, in the end of the third line. And connect yataha at the end of the second line to tasmat in the third line. Yataha, because scriptures reveal consciousness to be eternal, tasmat, therefore, Shankara concludes, na buddhya kriyate, consciousness cannot possibly be created, buddhya, by the mind. Consciousness cannot possibly be created by the mind because, obviously, consciousness pre-existed your mind. Before you were conceived, before you were born, what mind? After your body is put in the oven, sorry to be a little graphic here, just for fun, after your body is burnt to ashes, what mind? So, Shankara is making a very important conclusion here. Therefore, because scriptures reveal consciousness to be eternal, therefore it cannot possibly be a product of the mind. Na atmana, nor is it created by atma. Huh? Created. That which is created has a beginning point, a moment of creation. So you can't say that one day, Atma is like, just a silly metaphor, Atma is like a light bulb, one day it turned on. Give me a break, what a ridiculous thing. Atma is consciousness. They're not two different things. There's no unconscious Atma that one day became conscious. Atma is consciousness. Therefore, na Atmana. Consciousness was not created by Atma. Anyenava. Or by anything else. Atma is Sada. Eternal. Uninterrupted. Uninterrupted consciousness. Now you can get the sense here of why I said before Shankara appears to anticipate the modern debate going on in neuroscience. He says it's not a product of the mind. Of course, here's what neuroscience argues, that the brain gives rise to the mind, and the mind gives rise to consciousness. This is neuroscience. Brain gives rise to mind is very different than the ancient worldview that mind is subtle stuff. So science is indeed threatening this ancient worldview that your mind is made of subtle stuff, because science can and is clearly demonstrating how your mind is indeed a product of neural activities in the brain. And this can't be refuted. Therefore, science is capable of refuting an pre-scientific worldview which separated the world into sthula bhutas, physical stuff, and sukshma bhutas, non-physical stuff. So science is refuting that. I should say science has refuted it. But tell me, the central teachings of Vedanta, do they depend on this pre-scientific worldview? Not at all. Let's be very clear about that. This was a worldview adopted thousands of years ago. What choice did they have? They didn't have modern scientific techniques. They did the best they could, given the resources that were available to them. The resources available to them was human mind, very powerful. Human minds that came up with this pre-scientific worldview. So science indeed can refute this ancient worldview that your mind is made of subtle stuff, as taught in Tattva Bodha. But this is not what Vedanta teaches. Is the purpose of Vedanta to teach you what your mind is made of? Is that the purpose of Vedanta? The purpose of Vedanta has nothing to do. Science and pre-science can analyze this topic. What is your mind made of? Is that really bad philosophical joke? What is the difference between matter and mind? So philosopher says, matter is not mind. What does that shook? What is mind? Not matter. What is matter? Never mind. Sorry, that's... You all laugh, that's good. You're all kind of like philosophers. It's a very geeky joke. All right, but you got it. So Shankara, let's finish up our verses here. So Shankara here, just to finish our line of thought. The fact that science can refute an ancient pre-scientific worldview adopted by Vedanta doesn't show a weakness of Vedanta. It shows the antiquity of Vedanta. And the central teaching of Vedanta has nothing to do with whether the mind is matter or subtle matter or an activity or whatever it is. That's not what Vedanta teaches. Vedanta teaches consciousness, the nature of consciousness. So with that in mind, we'll see this last verse. Baudhaistu pratyayairhevam, baudhaistu pratyayairhevam, kriyamanaischa chinnibhaihi, kriyamanaischa chinnibhaihi, mohita kriyate jnanam, mohita kriyate jnanam, yahus tarkika janaha, yahus tarkika janaha, tarkika janaha, janaha, people who are tarkika, who resort to logic and reasoning and science. These are the neuroscientists that I say that Shankara anticipated. So these tarkikaha janaha, people who use logic, or neuroscientists, what about them? Ahuhu, they say, what do they say? Kriyate jnanam iti. They say that the mind, kriyate jnanam, creates consciousness. Why do they say that the mind creates consciousness? Because they are mohitaha. They're deluded. They don't get it. They haven't studied these teachings. I have no doubt that if a scientist could truly be objective and study Vedanta, they would stop trying to prove that the brain creates consciousness. They would give up. They would say it's impossible. Okay, so how is it that these ancient followers of a school of logic, by the way, Tarkika was an ancient school of thinking, so why would they in ancient times and neuroscientists in modern times, why would they conclude that consciousness is created by the mind? Because, go up to the top now, because pratyayaihi, you have to find that word in the middle, pratyayaihi, pratyaya is an activity. And it's a word we often use with regard to activities of the mind, which is what Shankara says here. Baudhaihi pratyayaihi, activities of the mind. By the way, a few of you who know some Sanskrit might be thinking, Baudha, aren't those Buddhists? Baudha is a word used for Buddhists. True, but Baudha also means that which is of the buddhi. Has both meanings. Come on, don't get stuck on one meaning of a word. You look it up in a dictionary, there's a bunch of meanings. So in one context, Baudha means a follower of Buddha. In another context, this context, Baudha means that which is related to buddhi, your mind. So these Baudha pratyayas, these activities of your mind, evam, thus they are kriyamanaihi, they're taking place. These activities taking place in the mind are, and here's a crucial word here, they are chinnibha. Chinnibha means similar to, like. Chin is chit when you break the words apart. They resemble consciousness. The activities of your mind resemble consciousness, giving rise to the wrong conclusion that your mind creates consciousness. So first of all, what does it mean? Activities of your mind resemble consciousness. Well, when you look in the mirror, that weird-looking fellow resembles this one. There's clearly a resemblance. Now, we've used this metaphor enough to know that they're not identical, but you can't deny the resemblance. But these neuroscientists, well, I'll leave them out, to conclude that this fellow is real is the problem we're talking about. This fellow in the mirror is not real. So this the similarity is there, and that's what Shankara points out here, that yes, of course, there's a similarity between consciousness and experience. Consciousness and consciousness reflected by your mind. Consciousness manifest in your mind right now in the form of experience, certainly. There is a resemblance. Resemblance is not identity. Right? Like in the mirror. Resemblance is not identity. But look what happens when we blur the line and we think, that is me. Watch this. When the mirror goes away, I don't exist. When the mirror comes, I'm back. It comes and goes. Not only that, but I only exist when the mirror is present here, proving that I am produced by the mirror. Right? Do you follow the logic? I don't exist. I look in the mirror, I exist. Evidence that I am a product of the mirror. This is the logic that Shankara refutes here. So when you conclude, when you fail to discern the difference between resemblance and identity, when you take experience as being absolutely real, as being as real as the unchanging consciousness which you are, then you make a wrong conclusion. Here's a wrong conclusion. This is very, very fundamental, but very simple. Can experience exist without a mind? If you follow this teaching, by definition, consciousness is a manifestation of consciousness. I'm sorry, experience is a manifestation of consciousness in the mind. No mind, no experience. Like in deep sleep, right? No mind, no experience. What about consciousness? Consciousness arises with the mind. When you wake up from deep sleep, conscious experience resumes. Conscious experience resumes, not consciousness. This is the confusion. This is the wrong logic. You note when you wake up, experience resumes. That experience resembles consciousness. Therefore, consciousness resumes, when the mind resumes, leading to this conclusion, consciousness is a product of the mind. So how thoroughly Shankara refutes this, and he refutes these ancient Tarkikas, the followers of the school of logic, and all of these arguments absolutely apply to modern neuroscience. Even though modern neuroscience understands the mind differently than Shankaracharya did, the conclusion that they're trying to make, that consciousness is produced, consciousness is a product, that conclusion is absolutely refuted by Shankara here. So this is a good place to conclude today.
Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti 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 om tat sat.
Very good. This one.
Okay, and